Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Horror Film Lovers Podcast. I am your special guest tonight, Michael McGlynn, and I'm with me always the beautiful, the lovely, the wonderful, you know him, we love him, Jonathan Moody!
Wow, you always say like beautiful and lovely, and I'm like, okay, brother. But thank you. Also, I loved how you called yourself special guest. You are the co-host, sir.
Oh,
you know, this is, you know, yeah, don't call yourself a special guest. The special guests are for the other extra people we have that come on if they come on, you know. But anyway, continue.
And tonight we have a great, great, great special one on for y'all tonight. Like we are going to touch into the realm of, I know scare some, but I promise you not all of them are bad. We are going to the realm of a remake. But we have a great one tonight, though, for y'all. This is, in my opinion, is one of the better remakes out there. We are going to do Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead, baby.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this. It was also produced by one James Gunn.
Well, it was also written by him, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if that's not an awesome power team right there, I don't know what is.
I mean, it's so funny because that became the DC like thing of like Zack Snyder went to DC and started working with them. Then James Gunn is now the head of DC, and I wonder if he'll like. I don't know if Zack Snyder's going to come back to DC or not, but I kind of hope that James will let him direct something. You know, like. I mean, just something at some point because he is really talented.
Oh yeah, no, like he writes great stories. I mean, I think it's always been a back and forth flaw with him, but it's never been one that's ever bothered me personally. I've always loved his work, but you know, Snyder does have a tendency of making long films, and people just don't want to sit down for that long because you know a lot of times he does those like you know 3 hour films,
oh,
some
yeah.
longer.
Well, yeah, because there's like his director's cut or whatever, like the Zack Snyder's Batman versus Superman that's like 3 or 4 hours long. And I'm just like, I didn't like seeing the 2.5 hour or whatever it was in the theater. Like that was just too much. Like a lot of people say the longer versions are better. Like Zack
They are.
Snyder's Justice League, which I think is 4 hours or
Oh,
so, like
it's
is
not.
better.
Oh, it's not even a comparison. Josh Whedon's, I to anyone out there, I apologize if you feel this way, but if you compare it by writing arc, by story, by actual character development, and making a good human engulfing story, I'm sorry, Josh Whedon's Justice League is crap compared to Snyder's. Snyder wrote an artistic masterpiece, in my personal opinion. I've told many people this. Snyder's Justice League is easily in my top three of greatest comic book movies of all time. It is definitely, for me, will always be Christopher Reeves' 1978 Superman. It started it all for everybody. I mean, I know people are going to want to jump on and say the 60s Batman. And I was like, I get where you're all coming
that's
from.
A TV series, yeah, and I don't count it the same. Or even the movie version of it, but still, it's still a TV movie.
Yeah, and it didn't really, like, you know, it was fun, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. I own the series, so I'm definitely not dogging on it, but it's not what grabbed the world by storm. It was something fun that the kids really enjoyed hanging out and watching as a part of their, I think it came on on the weekdays, I believe. But anyway, Superman was that first legit comic book movie that just straight up told like everybody that, it was even the words, you will believe a man can fly.
Right.
For the times, it was remarkable, like special effects. The helicopter, I mean, alone. I mean, but why? Well, I'm sorry. As always, we're getting off base here. Back to Dawn of the Dead.
Well, I was going to say, people are like listening to you, and what does this have to do with Dawn of the Dead? But get to the point.
I absolutely loved the Dawn of the Dead remake. I thought it was a great one. Because I know it's always been that mixed stigma with people on remakes, and I get it. There are some that I thought were absolutely fantastic, and some I just said, "Why did you do that?"
Look, I get it because like the first movie, the first Dawn of the Dead was a was a story of consumerism, and it had this, like, 70s political agenda in a way, whatever. And then this one is just more like fucking, like, balls to the wall action and, suspense and violence and all that stuff that James Gunn is just really, really good at writing. And the shots were amazing. So Zack Snyder did a really good job with that. The music was perfect, which I've heard he did, like, he put a lot of the, like, chose a lot of the music himself, because he had specific things in mind,
I'm
So.
not at all surprised. I mean, Gunn, I would give Gunn all the credit in the world when it comes to making soundtracks for his
Oh,
movies.
no. I'm saying Zack Snyder did that. Snyder put the, yeah, because you're right. James Gunn is really good at that too for directing. So maybe, I don't know, I don't think he learned it from Snyder. I think they both had this very similar thing, but, like, Snyder was the one who knew, like, which songs to sort of put in there, like the Johnny Cash song in the beginning, and then, later, I mean, just all the ones that are about death but don't have, like, a specific, like, like, they're not these hardcore heavy metal things. They're just songs that you're like, oh shit, they're talking about death, but it's not. It's like almost happy-go-lucky songs, like, it doesn't sound like the kind of song that would be there, And I think that's what his point was.
No, I completely agree. I mean, and I loved like and one thing I always look for in my in all my remakes that really helps me like really decide if I'm gonna like it or not is are you giving nods to the original to show your for what it was? Because there are some that will throw quite a few fun nods in there, and then there are some who like unfortunately some are just like you know what. I don't want to give you any nods to this because I think what I'm writing is a different story, or yeah, or I just think it's better than what the original was. I mean, and that's a fair statement. Like, I mean, if you really feel that way, then go with it. But and we'll let the cards lie with the fans on how they feel about it. But with Dawn of the Dead, that was definitely one that I felt like they really did great on the nods. I loved how they had the newscaster, like, bid the big end is like, we do not know. We do. I mean, like or like when you had Ken Foray show up.
Yeah, as the televangelist. I was actually talking to my dad about that earlier. It's like, he's never seen Dawn of the Dead, neither of them, right? And, like, that's, horror is not his forte,
I get
and everything. So I told him, like, how cool it was that a what is it? That Zack Snyder put Ken Foree as the televangelist, but he got to say his original line, the line that made him sort of a star. And any other director could have put somebody else in that particular, could have gave that line to Ving Rhames, and said, okay, we're just taking the line because it's famous, and putting it in into the and Ving Rhames would be the perfect person. However, he's not the original. And putting it back in the original's mouth and have them say it, but have them say it as a televangelist, which makes actually more sense than, because I rewatched that scene with Ken Foree saying it, and he was he said it sounded a little weird than now that I hear it. It was a great line and it works,
it
but
was very dark tone kind of feeling. It was almost kind of like I foresaw this. I told you about this. You didn't hear. You didn't listen to me. Almost
yeah.
kind of a tone almost.
And then Tom Savini as the local sheriff. I mean, how awesome was that?
And that right there in itself is another reason why I'm a fan of both Snyder and Gunn both when it comes to their directing because one thing you see in all their films is that they embrace their childhood nostalgias, things that they grew up loving. They embrace it completely, and they want to like somehow put it on a pedestal when they're doing it, or in these type of cases.
Well, Tom Savini was the like special effects makeup person slash he was an actor in the original Dawn of the Dead. I mean, I think Dawn of the Dead was how he got his start, you know, and everything. So if they had just said, "Oh, we don't need Tom Savini," you know, but I think Zach and James are probably both horror fanatics. They
Oh, yeah.
know the importance of this, and they put those things in there. And I think stuff like this gets overlooked by horror fans because I feel like horror film lovers, like the people we're supposed to be talking to, are people who a lot of times just go, oh, they did that because, you know, they wanted to, you know, they want to just throw that nod back there to the original. Like it was a problem, you know, but this is exciting stuff, man. Like I saw it, I hadn't seen this movie in, since I think since it came out, honestly, because on DVD, because I used to own the DVD. In fact, I used to own the DVD and I bought it from my local video store because it was at that time where you could buy previously titled movies or whatever, like for $6 or something, you know. And I went and, you know, I would get some whatever was interesting and I bought Dawn of the Dead, this Dawn of the Dead. I went home and I watched it and I was like, this is pretty damn good, you know. Unfortunately I never watched it again. It wasn't because I'm just not a zombie fanatic, and it takes something like this where I'm gonna be talking about it or like something else to get me to watch these, you know, kind of films.
No, I get that. I mean, like zombie genre has always been a wave for me even. I mean, it's like, when I came across like the Romero series as a young kid, I fell in love with it and watched all the Romeros. And I even watched some of the offbeat zombie ones that were made in lieu. And then I mean, the Return of the Living Dead movies, at least the first two, I really enjoyed a lot.
But
And
come on, you can have as a, you are a zombie fan, right? You like zombie movies.
oh yeah, I mean, like I kind of go on and off with them. A good example is like, say, like Walking Dead. When Walking Dead came out, I fell in love with Walking Dead. I thought it was great. I watched it on the very first one because originally it was just supposed to be a filler for the month of October for AMC because they had nothing lined up to use. And they're like,
Right.
great, short one. It's only got six episodes. We can punch it out throughout the month of October, ended in mid-November, and we're done. And it just blew up so much, and rightfully so. It was a great written series, and the next few seasons were great too. But then it got to the point where like it just
Got
felt like,
stale.
yes, and you're just going through the motions. And then it got to the point where most of the time where you almost forgot that there was even a zombie apocalypse going on because it became more of a man versus man. And I'm
Became a
okay with that.
drama, like a soap opera. Soap
Yeah, yeah.
opera zombies.
Yeah, and I'm totally okay with like, man versus man seasons here and there on the way, because yeah, in theory that would happen. There will be there will be groupings of little factions probably going on in the apocalypse, and if you're not a part of that faction, you're a part of the problem kind of mentality.
Right.
But I remember at one point, I think it was like they had that kind of theme going for like 3 or 4 seasons straight, and I was like, can we get back to some good old fashioned just hordes of zombies just raining in on your parade and just eating half the crew, and then we had to get a whole fresh new crew. And that was, I think, one thing that went stale with a little too, is they that re revolving door, and they started keeping on mains and not changing it.
I remember watching like I don't watch The Walking Dead, but it would be on TV and I'll be like flipping through channels and I'll see it on like AMC or whatever. And so I'd see it and what made me laugh so much was like if you just turned on the channel for that, like or whatever, most of the times the zombies are just in the background, like outside of the house, just walking around, going, you know. And occasionally they like might shoot one or something, but most of the time they're just like in the house arguing about, you know, oh, this person slept with this person, or this thing happened, or oh my God, how can, you know, this guy's taking over our group, you know. And I'm like this just doesn't interest me. Like I'm like I get it because it takes the soap opera, the primetime soap opera kind of thing, or the regular time soap opera thing, and puts it into a different location, and everything. But it just, I don't know. Like, I would rather have a show that was just constantly dealing with zombies all the time. Like, if they did like 28 Days Later as a show, and it was just nothing but just trying to survive a zombie apocalypse, like constantly, no, like, not much of the zombie, the drama, it might be interesting. They could do it, I
Well,
believe.
and one thing they definitely need to tweak on too, that became a problem later on. I actually want to say it actually begun with the Governor series and moved on. Like it came on big time to Negan at one point too, but it's something that I think a lot of people overlooked a lot of times. I'm like, y'all do realize that a lot of these feuds and issues are fighting, Rick's team are the ones who actually started it. So they're actually the bad ones. Like, like a good one is like with the Governor. People don't pick up on it real quickly, but Rick's team were the ones who started killing the governor's people before the governor ever killed any of them. Negan,
Well,
wait, they took out a whole a Negan's whole entire station. Negan didn't even know who the hell they were, and you killed his a whole entire station of people. So yeah, you're damn right he's gonna put y'all line y'all up and make you all into an example. Who wouldn't?
all right, back to Dawn of
Yeah,
the Dead, back to our regularly scheduled podcast.
we should Walking Dead.
I know we should have done The Walking Dead at some point. I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess it could count. I don't know. I actually, let's not, because that means I have to watch it, and I really don't want to. But to go back to the Dawn of the Dead,
Yes.
what I liked about it was the drama between the I mean, they did this really well, where it was the drama between what is it, the people, the main people or whatever, plus dealing with the zombies. So you've got the main people fighting each other inside. At one point they capture one of the guys, and or takes one of the guys, basically puts him away because he's just argumentative and stuff. Like, he's not, he's fighting them when he should be, like, everybody should be on the same side. I mean, at first they didn't even want them to come in, and I'm like, why not? They're none of them's bit. There's more people. I mean, more heads are better than one and none, right? Like,
Exactly. They have their
so.
own too. That's more firepower in your arsenal now.
Yep. And they took their guns to begin with, and I thought that was stupid. Like, what? I mean, I guess if you're afraid that people are gonna shoot you, but that was a cop and some other people. Like, they're not. It's not like they're there to start a war between the humans, they want to kill these stupid zombies,
I agree.
So.
Completely. I mean, and actually, I think that was also funny enough another little factor of why I guess it's one of the fun factor I find for my remakes is that not only did they throw some nods, but they also hold true to the story, but yet they find their own ways of doing some fun tweaks to still make it their own. A good example would be My Bloody Valentine remake, where they totally swapped the killers around from the original, threw everybody off, and it was.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen the my Bloody Valentine stuff, but it's okay. We'll probably eventually do that, at least the remake.
Oh, I love.
On yeah, I actually really that's another really good remake.
Dawn of the Dead, even it's like in the original, you really had the core three, and going and trying to survive in the mall, and then at one point you have a group of bikers coming near the end. While in the remake, you actually had a fair sized group of people, and you actually had more. And I felt you actually hit the marks a little bit more for me, because you would have had nighttime security at the malls to watch over the malls. Even back in that era, they had them. For me to think that three random people could come into to a mall where like there's just no one who ever thought of that, no security, no nothing. I kind of thought the security of being there already, and then that truck full of actual people who actually had the same idea coming, I kind of felt like that felt more organic to me, I guess is the best way to put it, versus like, so no one's gonna go hit the mall but these three. And and even with the bikers, I mean, the bikers picked up on it because of the radio signal.
Right.
So, no, I guess it just kind of like even with the bikers, it's like I would assume the bikers, like, would have been hitting that mall first and foremost. And like, yeah, we got the numbers, we got weapons, we can roam right in there, steal all the stuff we want, get out of there. We got all the supplies, all the ammo, everything we need.
Right.
So,
Well, I'm glad they didn't go with the bikers thing again. They tried it. They did switch it up. And I think they see for the remake, they had a huge, bigger budget, right? Much bigger budget. You know, I think Dawn of the Dead, let's see how much the original Dawn of the Dead cost, but it was not. I mean, I'm sure the budget was.
I know it was. I mean, like, it wasn't a shoestring budget, but by like studio production level, it was a shoestring budget.
Yeah, I mean, by our standards, I mean,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For
it
you
was
and me.
maybe a couple million or something, you know, at least. Budget estimated was 60 $650,000.
Yeah, I'd sell my soul for that
But
kind of
back then, that was 650. Then I bet in 1978, that would be the equivalent of like 2 million now, you
budget.
know, sort of thing. Dawn of the Dead, the remake. How much do you think the budget is?
Given that time and with Snyder and the IP, I'm gonna go and say 25 mil.
Very close. Good job. 26 mil.
Oh,
Wow. It should have been 25. That's weird to always go like 26. You know, oh, and you know, like who. What studio goes, I'm gonna give you 26 million to make this movie. You know, I guess they have a line producer that's gonna break everything down, you know, to a T, and maybe they had to do reshoots. I don't know. Nowadays, that's all they fucking do is reshoots. I'm like, why are you spending so much freaking money? You know, you're just wasting money. Marvel, stop it.
you know what the funny thing is? I will get right back on the Dawn of the Dead. I just wanted to make a quick note of this one. That like during the whole like early era, it was always funny how everyone was always making fun of DC for not finding their right footing while Marvel had all it down right. And now Marvel's in that same boat now where they're like backtracking, like, yeah, we gotta start relaying some pathways. We're making some wrong steps here. We need to go back and restep again. I just kind of think it's funny. It's like, it goes in full circles, apparently, with.
It keeps reversing because remember, at one point, Marvel was in the tubes and DC was kicking ass, giving Superman whatever, you know, a Superman 78, then Batman 89, and all the way up to Spider-Man was the thing that brought Marvel back on the map, and then DC had never really fully like got. You know, DC spent too much time making Batman Forever and Batman and Robin that they didn't make, you know, like, and I, as much as I love Joel Schumacher, you know, and he never gave us shiny you know, twinkly vampires. He gave us like, you know, badass vampires and the Lost Boys, but to me, to me, Joel Schumacher kind of killed DC. Like, that sounds terrible, but to admit, but like those two movies really at bombed badly enough where, like, you know, so then after that, Batman Begins and all the Batman movies started to get better and whatnot, and then they were able to do that. But I mean, I think they should have concentrated on other characters, not just Batman. And not just Superman, but you know.
That's the crazy thing. DC's got so many awesome IPs that are at their fingertips, and it feels they're just now finally to realize, oh yeah, these guys probably will, or these girls will probably sell, won't they?
Yep.
Like, yeah, just make it good and write a decent story, and you'll be surprised what you get in return.
Thank you, James Gunn, because I have a pretty good feeling about Superman. Is it not no longer called Superman Legacy, apparently. He wrote a tweet about that it's now just called Superman. So I guess it'll be like Superman. You call it Superman 2025, you know.
I will say one thing though. I mean, so far his casting's been looking really solid.
Yep. So to go back to James
Yeah.
Gunn's other movie, that's you know, because like you look at James Gunn's career, and he direct, you know, he wrote, originally wrote like Romeo and Juliet. That's how he got his start. Then he wrote a movie called The Specials that we reviewed for Indie Film Cafe. And it was like a Mystery Men type, you know, superhero comedy parody, you know, thing. But it was like Mystery Men if they had like no budget, you know, and they only could talk about the stuff, they couldn't actually show anything. And it was kind of like a little bit more disappointing rewatching it. And then he made like stuff like Slither and didn't
He did do that movie that had Rann Wilson in it and Paige.
Super.
Yeah, super. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it was kind of like a underground Kick-Ass movie almost.
Right.
But I
And
enjoyed what it was. I thought it was pretty good.
so, and then, you know, in his contribution to horror, you know, being like Slither was really good. And then he also did, you know, I think he wrote some, I'm correct, he wrote a movie about an office building. Let's see. He wrote, obviously, he wrote the Guardians of the Galaxies, and that's kind of what put him
Oh, that.
over the edge. But he wrote a is this writing or directing? I think this is directing. No writer. The Belko Experiment, which was a horror film. And he wrote that for Greg McLean to direct. And it was like a twisted social experiment. 80 Americans are locked in their high-rise corporate office in Bogota, Colombia, and ordered by an unknown voice coming from the company's intercom system, participate in a deadly game of kill or be killed. Basically, it's battle royale in a office, you know. And I think they even kind of like showed it like that. They kind of discussed it like that, you know. Basically, you've seen battle royale, right? Or heard of it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically that. But anyway, so yeah, he had done a bunch of horror stuff, and he's a horror fanatic. I'm surprised he, because like, it looks like, so James Gunn is with Peter Safran. They run, I think they're, I don't know if they're running DC together. They probably are, I think. But Peter also worked a lot with James Wan doing the horror stuff, you know? And I'm just surprised James Gunn didn't, like, it doesn't have his hand in that. But I guess if you're gonna be the president of DC, you know, or whatever, co-president of DC, you know, you gotta concentrate on that, you know. And I
Don't
think
really have much else at that point. I mean, you're in the, he's in the big seat.
God, could you imagine, like, I don't know how, like, because that's something like I dream of, you know. Like, I dream, like, I'll be in the big seat like that, you know? I mean, I do know it's got to be stressful as fuck, you know, right? Because not only do you have to please people, you got to please as many people as you possibly can, and you're going to get death threats, and you're going to get people hate on you. Everybody's going to say everything's wrong. There's going to be deep fakes coming out and all this stuff. And now, God, we keep getting off track, but yeah, just running that company has got to be hard for James. So I kind of feel bad for him in a way. Like, I feel like he's a lucky son of a bitch, but then also feel like he's also, damn, he's got some shit he has to deal with.
Well, and in all fairness to him too, I mean, I feel even more bad for him in that sense because he's not dealing with just any crowd. He's dealing with the comic book crowd. The comic is probably the most like biggest when it comes to being loyalist, true to its core material, and if you don't do everything right down to a T, they will
Those
black for it.
are those people. They're also the unloyalists who believe like not everything has to be exactly comic book wise, and they don't, in fact, they don't want it. to be like the comic book. They want it to be the exact opposite of a comic book. And those people you also have to please. So you have to please the people, and you're not going to please. You're not going to please everybody. So
Oh,
what he's got to do is he's just got to please himself, you know? That's how I kind of view it.
I completely agree with you on that too. It really is one of those things of where especially with James Gunn, you've had a lot of success doing. Don't deviate from that. Keep going with it. I mean, until you feel like what you're doing is not really grabbing the people anymore or getting you a good solid fan base anymore, then yes, maybe go ahead and deviate off of it. But believe in yourself and believe in yourself. I mean, James Gunn is, like you said, he's a great writer and he's a very good director too. I mean, it's not like he caught lightning in a bottle once with Guardians. He's made lots of really good movies throughout his career. Some of them as big of note as others, but overall, most of everything he's done, I've thoroughly enjoyed.
Right. So, and including this one, which, you know, including this movie that we really thoroughly enjoyed, because because James knows, you know, when he looks at these things, he knows what kind of movie he made. Scooby-Doo, you know, he wrote Scooby-Doo. Like,
Somebody.
those are just so much fun. Even the Scrappy-Doo one, the second one with Scrappy-Doo, I'm like, yes, we get to
Yeah.
see Scrappy, you know?
Oh no, I love him too. I felt like he hit every chord of my childhood nostalgia, which is kind of what I said earlier about him. Is like Gunn and Snyder both have a great way of finding a way to bring their nostalgia. And what's great is like it works for what they're making at that time too. It's not like they're forcing in some of their nostalgia love and it feels off beat or off track. Even at times when maybe you feel like it shouldn't work, he makes it work. I mean, once again, Guardians of the Galaxy is a perfect example. If like imagine you're at the head of a studio and some guy comes and goes, I have this great idea like for our next big comic book movie. Okay, what? Is it like a new Hulk? The Red Hulk? I mean, is it the Silver Surfer? I mean, what you got? We're gonna do the Guardians of the Galaxy. You mean that a comic that barely made any sales to even keep the paper on it printed and going? Yes, but we're gonna do something different. What? We're gonna add a lot of crazy 70s iconic music to it. Most studios would have been like, we wish you the best, but you're not for us. But
They gave him a shot. I mean, that was at that time where Marvel was really taking chances and doing stuff that was outside the box. Nowadays, it's just agenda after agenda after agenda. And I've kind of heard DC is going that direction too, so I'm hoping that's not true.
probably not.
The problem is, like, you know, and this is another movie where this is an example of this movie for Dawn of the Dead. The lead is a woman, you know, right? You can obviously say Sarah Paully is the lead, you
Obviously.
know. And Ving Rhames is second, you know, is the male lead. And then there's Jake Weber and a couple other people. Kevin Zegers, man. That's fucking Air Bud, you know, the kid from Air Bud, you know.
Which character really threw me for a loop going back and watching? I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you actually pulled off that character as well as you did, which is Ty Burrell playing the condescending smart ass internal antagonist of the group, you could even say, big scumbag in the group. And this is Phil from Modern Family. Like the father, every when you like if anyone watches that show, Phil is usually that guy everyone looks and goes, I wish that was my dad who adopted me there. Like he's just like that fun loving, like that kid of heart. And to see him go from that to what he did in Dawn of the Dead, well, like where he's like that condescending, just like this nasty overall person, I'm like, wow. It's like I don't even if you told me you were going to play that role, I wouldn't have been sure that you would have sold me on it, but man, he did great.
It was only 5 years later. So yeah, no, and I also really liked Lindy Booth as the little girl behind me. in the picture behind me with her dog. By the way, if anybody who knows me and knows my movies or whatever, I mean, everybody always jokes about this. I do not like it when a dog is on a in a horror film. It gives me anxiety because the whole time I'm thinking, is that dog gonna live? Is that dog gonna die? What's gonna happen? And first of all, I love the use of the dog, like using him as sort of a way for them to get the to get the food over to the guy on the other end, you know, and everything, or the other building and everything. I thought that was fucking brilliant. I also love the fact that the dog basically lived up until the end. Because
Oh.
I mean, we never see him die. However, pretty sure he dies, you know, unless
Well,
he's
if you
survived.
know, I mean, I don't think it would be from the zombies, though. I mean, if anything, I would give it more to famish or something, because the zombies really did not look like they had any interest in that dog whatsoever. I mean,
Yeah, well, they did at one point because I saw a couple of zombies try to grab him, you know, and stuff or whatever, and he just like snuck right by everybody. So I think they might, you know, but really, yeah, I think the zombies didn't care about the dog as much as they cared about the humans, you know, or whatever, because they could barely see the dog, so they have to look down to be able to see the dog, you know, like they're pretty much looking straight going. You know,
I'm definitely with you about that with the animals, although I will play devil's advocate on that one. Like, because I am with you exactly. Everything you describe, when I see an animal in that, I do get like, oh no, come on, not the cute animals. But then those occasional horror movies that they make you feel like that's what it is, and they do a quick turn. Just because it's such a newer movie, I don't want to say the name and do spoilers, because it is kind of still new. But there is a new horror movie that came out where this guy was going around killing people, and he kills this one guy at his house, and he had a cat, and he was staring at the cat, and the cat was on the kitchen counter just staring at the killer, and the killer looks at him and just goes this long stare for a second. And then all of a sudden, it just cuts to the killer opening up a can of cat food. And he's feeding the cat and scratches his head before he leaves after killing his owner. I don't know. I saw that. I was like,
See,
oh.
now that I could be okay with or whatever, but I don't like stuff like and this is an older movie, so you know it's okay to spoil because if you haven't seen it, that's your fault for now. But the Boondock Saints had the cat that like they did the
Yeah.
you know he banged and all of a sudden the gun went off and killed the cat, which was a very Pulp Fiction. We realized that when we reviewed the movie that it was very Pulp Fiction. I never even thought about it that way. But like you know, the scene where was it John Travolta is talking to Marvin, and then he's like you know, and he
Hit the
bumps
bump.
over bumps, and then bam, shoots Marvin in the face. That was that with a cat, you know, or whatever. But so it was sort of it's supposed to be funny and also supposed to be a nod to Pulp Fiction, I think, which had come out I think about 5 years later or earlier. Gone 5 years earlier, so anywho, to go back to yeah. So anytime I see the dog, and then the dog, you know, is living, and I just kept going, okay, let that dog live, let that dog live, and then they get to the island or whatever at the end, and they all die pretty much. You don't really see it necessarily, but you know it's happening. You know, like you know, not all of them are gonna make it out alive. You know. It would have been cool if they had those had like a mid-credits thing where that was sort of the mid-credits sequence, by the way, which is pretty cool that they were doing that back in 2004. But that was during the credits. They show, you know, them going to the island and then getting attacked and then, you know, kind of just quick things with the zombies attacking, you know.
Which,
So.
yeah, I agree with you, but more likely, a lot of them probably didn't make it out.
Yeah, but you might be right. The dog might have. That would have been a really cool last shot of the movie after the credits roll. You see the dog just going boop boop and then like running off.
Yeah, running along the beach
Like,
and falling.
you know, 'cause that would have made me happy. I don't know if James Gunn himself is a big dog lover, or Zach and him are dog lovers, and they
Zach
just.
actually is a dog lover. He actually owns a few shepherds.
So Zach is a dog lover.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if James is necessarily or not, but
I would not. I never really. I know. He used to have a pet raccoon, and his name was Oreo because it was also his model for Rocket.
oh, that's cute. Yeah, but hey, Rocket's not a raccoon.
Trash panda. Is that worse? It's way worse.
Man. Yeah, Rocket was always my favorite character, and
Mine too.
it's so funny that it's Bradley Cooper, because I just, when I see Bradley Cooper from like Hangover or anything else, you know, I just don't think of him as saying those lines like, you know, Rocket. Like, I just can't picture him in my head doing it. Nor can I picture Vin Diesel going, "I am Groot," you know, and getting paid to literally just go, "I am Groot." Like, I don't know how much they paid him, but Jesus Christ.
Although he got paid very well, and the funny thing is too is that like he actually did an interview about that too, and he actually said that was his therapy to get over Paul Walker's death.
Aww.
Like he said, playing Groot helped him get into a more of a childlike state, and apparently he also did rave that like everyone on the cast and the crew were just like a big giant family, and that. And that you know Gunn you know, and one of the reasons why I like Gunn like and Snyder both so much they when they know that there's people that they like and that they really go in with the group they will always go back and keep using them again. I mean, if you watch Gunn's and Snyder's movies, you're always going to see a lot of the same actors that pop into them. Like Michael Rooker, for example, for Gunn, and that all stemmed from when Gunn was young, he watched Henry, and Henry really freaked him out. And like you know, and even said those first horror movies actually really scared the bejeebies out of me because I knew this was a real person out there.
Have you met Rooker?
I have.
I have too. And
It's so crazy.
I met him at a convention called Blood at the Beach. I don't know if you went there or not, but it was back in like 2000, and I think I met him 2012, maybe 11. 12, yeah, 12 or something. And so I like checked into my hotel room at the Virginia Beach hotel, and I came downstairs, and and this was before it was even open, but I was like Thursday or something, right? Or so, and I just wanted to see what the inside was gonna look like. So I came up, and Rooker was like staying right outside. And so I came up to there, and I knew him. Like, I knew exactly who he was when I saw him, because I'm a huge fan of Mallrats, one of my favorite movies of
Oh,
all
yeah. So
time. And
good.
so I said, "Hey, you know, am I allowed to just walk in there? You know, right?" Because A, I wanted to talk to R have a reason to talk to Rooker without like being like, "Hey, I'm a big fan of Mallrats. Let's shake hands." You know, like that would have been very creepy, especially doing it like in that voice. But he, so I come up to the door, and what is it? I come up to the thing, and I said, you know, is the am I allowed to go in there? And he's like, "Well, yeah, but you gotta pay a toll."
Nah.
And I was like, "Huh, who do I pay this toll to? You?" I was like, "Yeah, that would work."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
He is such a little fucker. But I've heard sort of stories about him being like, you know, on set, he's very like, he's kind of like Kane Hodder, likes to mess around with people and, you know, and stuff like that, which makes me happy to hear, because I like hearing that stuff. I like hearing, because you think of, I mean, you think of Rooker, you think of bad things generally. He's generally a bad
Yeah.
guy in most of his movies, you
Yeah,
know.
but no, he's actually one of the most funniest guys in the world. He like and what I like a lot about him is like he really enjoys interacting with his fans. I mean, and like you know, I'm not mean like yo, he's on stage and he's engaging with them on stage. No, this guy Like I remember one of the first times I met him, me and my wife were in line to meet Steve and Emil from Arrow and stuff. And he actually stood in the line to meet Steve and Emil with everybody. And he started conversation, and he goes, "So, who y'all waiting for again in this line?" Like, Steve and Emil, like, what show was he from? Arrow. Oh, that one was okay, I guess.
Why was he in the line? Was he just
You,
talking with everybody?
yeah, you just punking everybody.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, you just had a lot of fun with it on your way. Like I said, he really likes interacting with the fans on like on a one-on-one level and stuff. Like, if he has the opportunity to just stand right there in front of you and have fun with you, he's gonna do it.
I tried to get a picture with both him and Jeremy London. Who's both the Mallrats, and get a picture with them with my Brody t-shirt that I had and everything, and it just never happened. Sadly, I was never able to get both, but I was able to get autographs by both of them and stuff. And I think I got a picture with me and Jeremy, but I don't think I got a picture with Rooker. I'm sure I'll meet him again at some point, you know. So I like him. But I'm kind of sad he wasn't in this movie, but this wasn't directed by James Gunn, nor I don't know if they were even friends at that point, because I think Slither, which was a couple years later, was the first that they worked together, you know, if I'm
Oh,
correct.
yeah. I mean, it could be maybe like Dawn of the Dead was just like another like preamble for them.
When was Slither? When did the Slither come out? Okay, 2006. So 2 years after this. That was so nice that like James had put in some work writing, you know, movies before he got to direct his first feature, you know? And I mean, a lot of people drag on Slither because it's so Night of the Creeps, you know?
No, that was a great movie.
I know, but a lot of people like, or you know, say shit about that. But I don't care. I love Slither and I love Night of the Creeps. I could watch them both as a double feature, and it would be really fun, you know.
I mean, I think that one a little bothers me a little because, saying like Slither is like Night of the Creeps is like saying Sleepaway Camp is like Friday the 13th. It's like, are there some similarities there? Yeah, but I feel like there's way more than enough there to make it to say that it stands on its own, you know?
Well, I mean, somebody has to start, you know, something before people can sort of make almost a subgenre out of it, you know? And when it comes to like Friday the 13th and Sleepaway Camp and then, you know, all the other movies, you know, that have been from the Burning and other movies where it takes place on the camp, the Prowler, you know, stuff like that. It had to start with somewhere, right? And I'm pretty sure it started with Friday the 13th, but it could be wrong. There could have been something. I don't think any of the other ones were made prior.
Like on a camp level, I think you're right. I don't think there was one that was before Friday the 13th. Or if there was, I don't think it got a lot of attention. If it did, but yeah, it was as far as camp slashers go. Yeah, Friday the 13th was like the first one that really made me go, "Oh, hey, now you're talking my language," kind of movie.
Right. And I believe that the Prowler came out or was coming out around the same time. And I think, because I know Tom Savini worked on both, you know, so
I mean,
I wonder, did he do the effects for this one, by the way? Like this night, it did a dollar did.
don't know if he did or not, but honestly, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. The gore kills in this one were very good. I mean, in some ways, I kind of felt like they actually took it up a few levels from the original. In some ways, I mean, the zombie baby was definitely a cool twist.
Zombie Baby was pretty cool, you know. Like I forgot about that. I forgot about that scene. I'm like, oh shit, there's a zombie baby in this movie.
Struggles for the people. That was like kind of one of those things that like I like you know You could see some struggles like in the original, but it was more internal, like on a relationship level, like with Flyboy and the main girl, because you could tell they obviously had some type of relationship, obviously, and stuff. And but I don't know. I mean, I liked how there was more of like a of an internal turmoil, I guess you could say, like in the remake, because there was already tensions in there. I forget the gentleman's name, but the main guy, like in the beginning, he was trying to play his cards right and not show his whole hand to the security guard, trying to have him ease him in, make him thinking, hey, these are your ideas, but I just want to make sure it's okay with you that we go with your good idea. Kind of thing. We kind of had to play a field with him to get into his graces and to really kind of show, like, hey, look, we're on the same team. We're not here to take over. We're not here to take anything, really. We just want to be safe, and the more people we have, the better safety we have.
Okay, I don't know if this is right or not, but this is on IMDb, so this could be right. Do you know who one of the makeup effects people were?
Who?
Heather Langenkamp.
Actually, I am not surprised about that. Her husband's in the industry too, actually.
Okay, does he run AFX Studios?
He might.
Because that's the
He is.
company that she worked for.
Ironically, if I'm not mistaken, I think he actually played himself in Wes Craven's New Nightmare, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean that is really a thing. She did marry a special effects artist.
David Leroy Anderson, right? This
Yeah.
guy. Yeah, D David Leroy Anderson. Let me see if he. So, yeah, interesting. Okay, yep. Co-owner and operator with wife, Heather Langenkamp of AFX Studio, a full-service special makeup effects shop located in Panorama City, California. So, yes, so that is Heather Langenkamp working on Dawn of the Dead as the special makeup effects girl with her husband. That, see, once again, taking something from like your childhood, Heather Langenkamp, putting it into the movie as just part of it. I think that's just this, that's just the chef's kiss right there.
I mean, and that's why I said there is a good way and there's a not so good way, I feel like, on handling remake, doing a remake. And I felt like what they did with Dawn of the Dead, they pretty much, in my opinion, checked every box that you
Yep.
needed. Good remake, in my personal opinion. I did not see any flaws in it. Same with how I felt with my Bloody Valentine remake, and actually another good one that I really felt like checked all the boxes perfectly too, and then some, was the Jessica Biel remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I did like that one a lot. It was better than the new Texas Chainsaw.
Now that one.
I almost don't think that should be called Texas Chainsaw because it had nothing to do with fucking, Texas Chainsaw, really. Like, it was just so awful.
It had some
But
good here and there and stuff.
for the
Plus,
Wrong Turn remake, oh my God. And from the same writer, what was he thinking?
that one, unfortunately, the ones prior to that one, even though as more low grade as they were, I mean, because I kind of feel like after Bloody Endings, the prelude when they're in the asylum out in the middle of the snow, I feel like after that one, for whatever reason, the quality and the production on that series just started to drop. Because I mean, I
I think it
remember, like,
started to drop after the first one because I think they'd like all of those pretty much went directly to video, and everything. I mean, they had people like what's his name? Joe Lynch directed one. I think he directed like the third or second or third one. I think maybe second one. But
yeah,
he did a
right.
great job, but like it's not as good as the first, like it doesn't have the star quality that the first. We're going to be reviewing that, by the way, on the next month. So that's another Lindy Booth movie. So we'll be doing two Lindy Booth movies back to back. So get ready for that, people. Because I
Yeah,
can't wait.
you don't have to twist my arm. And like,
I
funny,
know.
I know you told me about it before. I actually told my wife about that too. I was like, yeah, I'm like, you're gonna probably want to watch the next one we have to do too. And she's like, well, what's the next one? I was like, we gotta go back in. We're gonna have to watch Wrong Turn. She's like, oh yeah, I'm down.
I love always pleasing you and your wife like together, like, because I know you guys watch them together, you know, and I wouldn't, I mean, it'd be sad if I picked something that like you and your wife are like, oh, do we have to really watch this? I guess it's for the podcast, you know, like that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, there we haven't really picked anything that's like super bad yet, you know, or anything.
I don't think so
And
either.
it's been stuff that we've loved, or, you know, my thing is 80s horror films are just movies in the 80s. It doesn't necessarily have to be big movies or small movies. It's just movies in the 80s. 90s horrors, movies in the 90s. We, by the way, everybody, if you haven't checked out the last 90s horror films that we did with Madeline Deering, Michael was the special guest of that. We did Popcorn. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, that was great. I
Yes.
really back at it. Funny enough, after watching that one too, it got me in the mode. Like I was like, I kind of need a little bit more of that action again. So I actually went and I watched One Crazy Summer,
Nice.
just so I could get some more Hooper action in.
Good. Glad you had fun with that. So then yeah, I don't know what we're, oh yeah, I know what we're doing. We're doing whatever the movie, what movie did she recommend? It was like something on Tubi that I'm gonna watch. I'm excited because just she always picks the more obscure stuff. You know, like I have people in my life, Paul especially, Paul Presenza, he likes to pick out the more obscure stuff like not many people have heard of. I like to pick all the more popular shit, you know, the things that I grew up watching, because I didn't grow up watching obscure shit, you know, like I just haven't, you know. But I like all the popular stuff, so the Dawn of the Dead is a popular movie, so thank you. You know, that was a good choice. Wrong Turn is a very popular movie, the first one. And so I like that kind of stuff. And I can't wait. I think I have some really good, we're gonna have some interesting titles this season. So already we start off with my movie Scary Story Slumber Party, just to finish up the two that we were doing of our stuff. Then now Dawn of the Dead. Wrong Turn, whatever you pick, and so on. It's going to be a lot of fun this season.
Oh, it's gonna definitely be like, I definitely like how we're hitting some of that 2000 slasher era, like in a horror era. Because honestly, I don't think it gets enough love. I mean, people talk about the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s horror, and don't get me wrong, rightfully so. There was some really, really classic stuff that came out of all those eras. But on the flip side, though, too, I felt like the 2000s gave us some really good ones too, as well. That you know, like the urban legends, we got the Hatchet movies. Oh, I know there's so many more than that, and I'm just
They always say horror is dead, right? And or is dying or whatever bullshit. And it's not. Horror kind of goes in waves, you know, and it goes, and nowadays it goes in trends, which kind of sucks. Independently speaking, there's stuff like Hatchet and things like that that like kind of keep it fresh, a terrifier. You know, keeps it fresh and different and kind of neat. But those are on the independent side, right? The Hollywood side right now, you've got like Blumhouse, who wonderful company. Don't get me wrong, I love Jason Blum. There's just some things that I feel like he just kind of he kind of just tries to make things for everybody, like PG-13, when some of the stuff is supposed should be R, you know, hard R. And so it's got to be tough though to decide, like, okay, truth or dare, is that going to be R? Is that going to be something we should, you know, get to the kids? And then it comes out and it's kind of like, it's kind of weak, you know, like this isn't as cool as you could make it. You could have made it, you know, could have made it gorier, nastier. Black Christmas, that was a terrible movie. The remake, the newest remake that Blumhouse did, awful.
Okay. For a minute, I thought about the original. I'm like,
No. The original is amazing. The first remake, from 2006, it's okay. It's got a lot of problems and it's got a lot of issues that I just didn't like. But it's got Katie Cassidy, and I'm huge fan of her and stuff. So I didn't hate it. Then just was so mean-spirited toward men, which is what it was supposed to be, you know, and I just didn't like it. I found it to be unlikable, especially when they tried to make the girls likable. I'm like, who are you like making this for? Are you just, because it goes back to that line that Brie Larson said about she said she was talking about one of her movies that she was Wrinkle in Time or something, I think it was. And she said that white writers shouldn't be reviewing this movie, basically. This wasn't made for them. And I'm like, even if it wasn't made for them, that's still their job to review any movie, and they have the right to their opinion. Where, and if you don't like it, that's fine, but it's not like white men writers, and it's fine. You don't have to like what they have to say, because they may not, this may not be for them, you know, and everything. And so it goes to that, is like, I don't understand what they're trying to do with that remake, except for pointing out the fact that we are sort of, and we are still sort of living in a time period where women are taking control and power, and the way they do that is by destroying the men that are in power and everything. But by making all men bad, basically, except for this one dude who they almost have killed, you know, in the movie. I don't know if you remember that movie or not. I just recently watched it, so I can, like, it's fresh in my mind. Because in a year, that movie's gonna be off my mind, and I'm not gonna remember that shit, period, at all, because it is that kind of movie. But
Or remember it was not good. That's the only thing
no,
I.
and that is the one of the worst remakes, and it didn't do all the things that this movie does, because we're living in an age right now where people don't want to do that, because they want to make their own point, and they want to take a established IP like Black Christmas and stamp their thing on it. And I think it's wrong. Like, I think it shouldn't be the way that, you know, Hollywood does things. I think Hollywood nowadays should do the stuff like James Gunn did, where they throw in all the nostalgia, all the stuff that's fun. At the lead character, Sarah Paully's character, she is a badass. At first, she's not a badass, and then she grows to become this girl who's there shooting people and doing the things, you know, that, you
I
know.
mean, it was a whole like a whole mix of them. Like there were quite a few people in that group that could, you could tell can hold their own, you know.
Yeah.
I agree with you too. Like, and that's another thing I never understood. It's like, you know, people are always talking. Well, I've heard people complain about like no strong females. I'm just like, I can think of like so many from back in the day. What are y'all talking about? I mean,
80s was full of strong females. The
exactly.
90s was strong. The 90s had Buffy. Like,
Yeah.
Buffy was Buffy is the inspiration to my writing, you know.
Had alien movies coming out where Sigourney Weaver was kicking ass left and right. You had the Laura Croft movies coming out where she was a kick ass artist on that one, and they were fun movies that, like, you know, it didn't matter male or female, you enjoyed it. They wrote a way that either one can have fun with it.
Right. And this movie did that too. And now it's sad, where I'm hearing these stories of, like, and this is just a rumor, and I'm hoping this is not true, but I'm hearing that Lois Lane is going to be be the main focus of Superman, and Superman's going to take a back seat. Now, if that's true, that's sad. But then again, she can't fly. She's not going to be a superhero. So she's just going to do the stuff she has to do, and Superman's going to come in and do the stuff he needs to do. So I think people just blow things and they're just worried, and there's a lot of rumors and speculation and all this crap, you know.
More likely, it's almost people who probably watch the Superman and Lois show and are fearful now of that. But I was like, but what they don't understand is like, it was even the title, like, Superman and
And
Lois. And
Lois, yeah, like.
the premise of that show was it's them trying to actually be a family and also trying to keep their kids, like, blinded to the idea that their father is a god, pretty much, and honestly, and then like one of the kids actually starts developing the powers, and he has to finally come out about it, and not only come out about it, but also guide at least one, but finds out both of them later on, both do. And honestly, I don't want to give any much more away than that, but honestly, it's one of those like shows that when I heard it was CW, I already went in with very low expectations, because like CW was one of those ones. They started off with a huge bang. The first like three seasons of Arrow, mwah. The first three seasons of Flash, mwah. Even the first seasons of even the first season of Legends of Tomorrow, mwah.
I never got into Legends of Tomorrow. I wanted to because, like I'm an Avengers fan, right? So I like a team up group, and I was like, ah, this is like our, Justice League Avengers style kind of, team up thing. And then I watched and I was like, ah, I don't know. I didn't like the time travel aspect because they didn't do anything really cool with it. Like I thought that'd be neat if they did stuff with like, if they went out and took out Hitler or something, like that would have been fucking cool,
I mean, kind of expand on that in the later seasons and stuff.
Oh, well, should have done that to begin with, and then I would have,
I didn't mind the first season of that, but then after that, it started like it started churning the same things over. Like I remember, like the biggest downfall for me in Flash was I picked up the whole recipe on their episodes. It's like everyone. Grant Gustin's Flash has a problem. He doesn't know if he can overtake it. Everyone's kind of come around him and build his confidence up that he can do it and that they all believe in him. And then he goes off and wow, wow, he does it. The next episode is the exact same thing over and over again. And I think that was the part where both of them kind of deviated and went downward. In the first three seasons of all of those, every season was just one giant story that unfolded throughout the episodes to one big one. And the later ones, they kind of became more, there was a big story at play, but it also was being divided up with smaller sectional, like individual ones, and where it was that constant build up and stuff. It just became the point where like it became too predictable to want to keep going forward with it. And even with Arrow, always Arrow had to dignify himself, like, I do what I do for the team. Sometimes I have to do these things on my own without the team, but we're a team. We need to do this together. You're right. We are a team. We are Team Arrow. Can I still have your loyalty? And it was just the same every freaking episode. I'm like, all right, man. Maybe you should, I don't know, listen to your friends. I mean, if you keep
Yeah.
having this problem over and over again, maybe the problem is you don't listen to them.
Well, I mean, after a show goes on for so long, it sort of becomes like this repetition of like, we know what to do. We've been doing it for so long. We have the same crew, the same cast. We're gonna, and it becomes sort of like, you're kind of stuck in a rut. And I heard this story from Kevin Smith because he got to direct a few Arrow and Flash episodes in Canada. He didn't really direct, like when a director comes in there, everybody else already knows what they're doing and where they're gonna set up the camera and where they're gonna, do all the stuff. Director just pretty much just says action, and everything. In fact, Kevin Smith talked about how he would just leave the set while they were shooting and go get them fucking hamburgers, you know, at A&W and everything and come bring them back. And that made them all love him. But like, he didn't do shit. You know, if you watch his episodes, I don't think he directed them at all. Like, I think they were directed by, you know, the camera guy who probably just said, all right, we're going to set the camera up here and you guys go do what you guys already know you're going to do. You know what I mean? Like, based on the script and
More of
whatever.
a name notoriety catch. Like, hey, everyone, you know Kevin Smith, right? Well, guess what? He's going to direct one of our
Well,
episodes.
he talked about that too, and Jason Mewes got him into it and stuff. So he just asked his agent, can I direct that, you know, direct an episode? And they said, well, we'll look and see. And the ACW was like, yeah, come on out. So he flew out to Canada and everything, and he brought Mewes. You know, just to, you know, and then he was going to ask the people if he could have Muse, right? And so they said, this is a funny story, is he said, he comes up to them and says, hey, you know, I've got my buddy Jason. He kind of just like hijacked his you know, his way in here or whatever. Do you guys are is there a part that you guys was like, have you read the script? Like, yeah, there's a part we wrote for him specifically because we knew he'd be here because he's always with you.
That's cool.
And so they go, wait, hold on. Okay, well, all right, I'll let him know, but I'm gonna play with him first. So he comes to the hotel and he says, sorry, Jason, they don't have a part for you, but you can watch on the sidelines if you wanna check out the thing. And he was like, oh, okay, that's understandable. I'm just fucking with you.
Wow.
And Jason was like, you asshole. Oh my God. And like, that was the greatest moment of his life, as being an episode of The Flash, you know, or whatever. And whatnot. And I think that's cool. Like, it's neat. It's neat, like, to say he's directed The Flash. I think he's directed Supergirl, you know, he's directed a few of those. But once again, I think really it's literally they know what they're gonna do because they've done it so many times. They don't need some director to come in there and go, all right, this is what your motivation is, you know. And I guarantee you, Zack Snyder never had to do that kind of stuff with most of the professional actors he's worked with. He didn't have to go up and say, hey, you know, Ving Rhames, here's your motivation. Because then he'd be like, motherfucker, I was in Pulp Fiction, you
Yeah.
know. I know what my motivation is. All right. My motivation in this movie, not to fucking die. That's my motivation. Right? And stuff. I just I love, you know, I love this I love this movie. I thought this movie was, thank you for choosing it because it was a lot of fun to go back and look at.
Oh, absolutely, man, dude. I like I said, yeah, like I hadn't seen it in a while, and I was like, you know what? That'd be a good one to go back and watch. Because like I was that same way. I was like, it's been a long time since I've seen this one. And I remember I liked it a lot, and and like and I've been I actually was having a little bit of a craving for like some good reboots. Because my wife and I just watched the My Bloody Valentine remake not that long ago, and we watched the Texas Chainsaw one like I think like a month prior to that, and we're just like, I think we're just in that mode for like another one, and that one definitely filled the void.
Yeah, it was good. It was a very good one. It's on Netflix if people haven't seen it yet. If you haven't seen it, it's 20 years old, dude.
Yeah, I was like, what are you doing?
20
Okay.
years, man. 20 years. I don't know. When's the anniversary? Like, when's the actual anniversary to the when it came out? Because I think it had to have come out in the summer, right? This feels like a summer movie. This came out March 19th. Oh my God, it's literally gonna be almost 20 years coming right up this month.
Oh,
So
so is that almost like an anniversary nod to it as
I
well.
know, thank you. All right. Maybe
Okay.
what
Fine.
day is that? What day is March 19th here? Let's see, where's the okay. March 19th is a Tuesday. We could have this. We could, well, I'm gonna release it on Friday, but so it'll be out a couple weeks before that actual thing, you know. But that's pretty cool though. I'm very happy to have this movie as the anniversary kind of podcast talking about It being 20 years old, it doesn't even feel like it is, you know?
Oh.
I think it's Zack, excuse me, Zack Snyder's, I think it's Zack Snyder's direction that pretty much is just so much fun and feels timeless, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I agree. Like I said, I'm a big fan of all of his works. Even like his 300 movie, for example. I absolutely love that movie. I thought that was.
I didn't get into that. I couldn't get into that, and I couldn't get into Sucker Punch. I just those weren't for me. Didn't he do The Watchmen or something too? I just
That's my that and his Justice League film are probably my top two favorites from out of Snyder. The Watchmen is one of those ones where I think you have to like that kind of certain noir kind of dark style. But I absolutely loved it, and I think what I loved most about it is that yes, it was long, but if you read the comic novel for Watchmen and you watch that movie, you're going to go out and say, oh my God, outside of maybe just a couple of pages here and there, they pretty much did the book verbatim.
right.
I love when I see people do that, because one thing that always irks me a little bit is when there are such well-written pieces of literature that have stand through the test of times, and you have some new writers saying that, yeah, I'm going to rewrite that because I feel like I could write a better story than that. And I'm like, well, there's already generations there that will say, no, that's not true. I guess a good one was a good example is The Rings of Power. The writers and directors straight up said that they only read footnotes of the Lord of the Rings saga because they already felt like they could have wrote a better story than what Tolkien wrote. And as we saw by the ratings, nobody really thought that way.
Yeah, and like look at Madame Web, those guys didn't even read the books or comics or whatever. It's just, and a lot of the they're told not to these days. From what I've understood, Marvel tells them, don't go buy the comics, go make your own thing, because that's not the universe they want to build, and I get it with Marvel, because and a lot of people argue about this, but like Marvel's its own universe. It's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not the comic, 818 or whatever, world, I don't think. Like, it's not the comic world. Comic world is different than this, universe. Sometimes they might collide, like in Multiverse of Madness. I think that was sort of a more, because it had Xavier, and Xavier seemed more like the cartoon Xavier, not the so maybe it was like a live action cartoon world for universe that they were in and stuff, which is kind of cool. I don't know, but like, so anyway, by the way, the Watchmen that I have on Blu-ray is Watchmen with V for Vendetta and Constantine. It's got all three of them on
Okay.
their own separate discs and everything, and it's wonderful. I have not, I need to just sit down and watch all three of those at some
Oh yeah.
point, like back to back.
I mean, honestly, I'm not surprised by the packaging too. I see similar themes, especially V for Vendetta and Watchmen. There is definitely, a lot of that, like, it has that comic book esque dash vigilante dash like government anti-hero like agenda kind of story arc to it, but also they both deviate in their own pathways. When you watch them, it's not like you like, if you watch one and watch the other, you're going to feel like you're watching the same thing. You're not going to get that vibe at all. I mean, you'll pick up on certain tones that are the same, but as far as the story, like the time era, the placement, who the really the big issue is at hand. Actually, they take it in completely different directions, and both of them were great directions. Neither one was a bad one. And
I'll eventually watch them all. I own them, so I'm glad I have them, forever, and I can, like at any time if I'm like, I want to check out The Watchmen, like I can go into my catalog and pull it out. A lot of people fight for like streaming and everything. Not everything gets streaming, you know. We were lucky for Dawn of the Dead is it's streaming on Netflix, but like if it weren't, I would have to rent it or I would ha have to have owned it, you know, or whatever to be able to see it. Though I guarantee you, if I went to like my local Restore or Goodwill, I could have found a DVD of Dawn of the Dead. I remember that being very popular in the Goodwill and you know DVDs, you know, like that's something I probably could have bought if I or like bought for like 250, you know, to own. And I think I have it. Like I said, I think I still have my old copy of it. But that's at the studio where it's an hour away, you know. So I'm not gonna go pick that up just to, you know. So I was glad that it was on Netflix and I could watch it on there. And good that Netflix still has good shit, you know. But I is that about it, or is there any more that you wanted to like touch on?
I think I'm pretty good.
You're pretty good on it? All right. Well, everybody, thank you guys for checking this out. We had a little fun. Kind of strayed a lot in
Yeah.
this one, so just be if you made it through all of this, thank you. Please let us know if you have, because we really appreciate that. I love because once again, doing these shows, you never know what people are going to be like looking up. Like somebody might because it's the 20-year anniversary. Somebody might be, you know, looking up Dawn of the Dead and 2024 or not 2004. I'm glad there's not a Dawn of the Dead 2020. I don't think they could make one because there's no malls anymore, really. Like,
Yeah, the
you.
mall, there are still malls, but I mean, they're not the hot spot they used to be. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, they'd be dead like this. Like, they could find a abandoned mall. That would be kind of funny, you know, right? Like a mall that no longer exists but still up there, like looks like a mall. You know, that would be an interesting idea.
I'd have a lot of fun filming some, in a location like that. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's so funny because I'll tell you a story, and I don't talk about this publicly because it's sort of a little embarrassing, but I don't care. I was so I went to a horror convention up in where was it? Like Pittsburgh. And it was called what was it called? It's a really big horror convention in Pittsburgh, you know. So we went there with my friends and as I was and that was back when I used to drink and I was getting drunk every night and everything. And then the day that you leave is usually Sunday, right? You usually just go home on Sunday, you know, or whatever. Unless you want to stay the extra day and leave on Monday morning, you know, or whatever. But we left on Sunday and it was like an I want to say it was like an 8 hour, 9 hour drive, you know, from Pittsburgh to maybe it was shorter, maybe five. But like but my friend so I was hungover like a son of a bitch. And I wanted alcohol, but was not allowed it by my friends. You know, because they didn't want me drinking while I was, you know, like having to pee or you know, like whatever issues. And I get it. Like, so we're driving down, and they wanted to go to the Dawn of the Dead, mall. You know, that was like in the area. I was like, I want to just get home so I could drink. So I didn't really want to go on this little tiny excursion, right? Because I at that time I did not like zombies at all. And I don't think I had seen Dawn of the Dead at that time, you know? So I was like, why do I want to go to this area? Blah, blah, blah. So I've now changed my mind on things. If somebody takes me to a movie location that I'm not aware of, I'm gonna still get excited and take pictures and do that stuff because one day I may be a fan of whatever that movie or TV show is and you know, whatever, like I would be now. But yeah, I didn't do anything. I just kind of was there walking around going, this is a shitty mall to me. Like it was not the mall. Like it's not what, you know, it was a mall, you know, like to me, you've seen one mall, you've seen them all, you know? And so I was just like, you know, not my thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. Got back in the car, we left. And after then, I've sort of regretted that because, like, if I took pictures at the certain places that they shot everything, like everybody else was going crazy. Go, yeah, this is still here. Oh my God, this is still here. Oh, like, okay. You know, like, so let that be a lesson to anybody. If you got friends and they want to take pictures and they're enjoying something, enjoy it with them. My last thing was with Angus Scrimm. I didn't know who he was when I first met him. Because I had never seen the Phantasm. So I was like, so my friend was like, I want to get a picture with him. Do you mind taking the picture? And I was like, sure. I took the picture and I didn't ask for one, you know? Like, I think my friend said, do you want one? And, or like later. And I was like, no, I'm good. And now I'm like kicking my butt because I could have got a picture with Angus Scrimm. I met him. He's a very nice, very tall man, as you know, I'm sure you know from him being the tall man, but
Oh,
like,
yeah.
you know, I mean, he's not, it's not like, you know, trick camera work to make him look taller. He's a
Is
tall
legit.
guy. Yeah, he's legit tall. But he's a good dude. Sadly, he's no longer with us, and that's another reason. Like, get pictures with everybody you can as soon as you can, because you never know when somebody might pass, you know, and you might not get that opportunity, you
I mean,
know.
I got to meet Sid Haig the very first time at Scares for Care, and it was no more than I think 6, 7 months later, he is when he passed away.
Oh, and he was, man, I remember the first Scares That Cares when I met him, you know, and second Scares That Care, and I think he was there for like three or four of them before he passed. And each time he would just, you know, he would sit and he would chat. And Rob Kellum, who's Stro, the maestro of wrestling and everything, he had a blast chatting with Sid because they just bonded over Batman, the old Batman TV show. And Sid Haig was on that show. And
He
so
played it.
he played what?
He played the main villain's henchman a lot of times.
Yeah. So he was awesome and such a nice guy, and he said some things that I won't repeat here because he said them and he's no longer with us, and I don't want to like besmirch his name or anybody else's name based on him, but based on what he told me, but personally, you know, but I'm just saying like he was just a very nice guy, very cool, and yeah, so. Horror film lovers will return next month. Brand new episode where we'll be doing The Wrong Turn, the first one, the first Wrong Turn movie starring Jeremy Sisto, Eliza Dushku, and the beautiful Lindy Booth, who's in this movie with her dog. So we'll have two of her movies back to back. I'm excited because, you know, just both of these two movies are a part of my life, you know, and everything. Big part of my life, big part of my horror film loving life, you know. And so if you haven't seen Wrong Turn, go rent it, buy it, watch it. I don't think it's streaming anywhere. I'm sure you have it, you
Oh
know.
yeah,
I'm
I.
gonna what?
Oh, sorry. I actually have the whole box set. I own all of them except for, funny enough, I don't own the reboot. I watched it once, and I'm good.
It's not a wrong turn. They never really make a wrong turn, you know, in that movie. If you like see it, it's Midsummer. Like it's just a it's
Yeah, you actually nailed it, actually.
yeah, it's Midsummer. Like it's literally not, you know, because and they even joke about the fact that there was a, you know, a movie about, you know, those like a killer deformed people in West Virginia. It doesn't even take place in West Virginia. It takes place in Virginia, which really annoyed me. I'm sorry, I don't think communes like this exist in Virginia. Maybe in some other states or whatever, like Kentucky or something like that, you could get away with that. But like this Virginia is just so, we're so boring in a way. Like we don't have this kind of stuff, so
Well, I
I
mean,
don't
Virginia's
know.
always been that working man's state. Like, if you're not there to work, then you're probably in the wrong state. Because I mean, there's just so much, there's always been so much employment in there. I mean, we've always had the governments right outside of Northern Virginia and stuff.
Yeah, DC, yeah.
I mean, and of course we have all, but we have almost every tech corp that you can think of in this area. So if you're a techie, there's tons and tons of work out here.
Yeah,
As
it's kind of like the Silicon Valley of the East.
It really is in a ways.
Yeah.
How like Atlanta's became like the East Coast Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, all right. We got to do stuff out here too. And New York is just too New York. It's too expensive and nobody wants to go. Like, I hate to say it. People are like, why don't you ever move to New York? Why California? And I'm like, because if I'm going to pay the same that I would pay in New York, I want to at least be freaking comfortable with my weather. New York's too cold all the time, and everything. Just not for me. I don't even like Virginia because of the cold. I get colds way too freaking much. I've said if I ever move anywhere, it's going to be either Florida, back to California is the main plan, or Kentucky, someplace like that where it can be really cold, but it's mostly hot, mostly warm. So anywho, and I know a lot of people in Kentucky and I love them. So there you go. Well, everybody, hope you guys enjoyed this. Join us next month and we'll be back. Thank you, Mike. And thank you everybody else. Hope you guys enjoyed this and tune in. Bye, everybody.